What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Lawyer You Know podcast. I'm your host, attorney Peter Tragos, and on this podcast, we break down the trials and cases you care most about so that you can understand how the American criminal and civil justice system works. We try to make sure you understand your rights by answering your questions as, well, a lawyer that you know. So we want to walk you through this process, and we can do it together. Make sure you get in the comments or in the chats to ask the questions that have been burning in your minds. And while this is not legal advice, it's always exciting. So buckle up for another episode of The Lawyer You Know. What's up, everybody? Happy Friday. After not hanging out for a day, we are back at it together here. And it's been an interesting week, right? We got the Murdaugh hangover. Stuff still coming in. I wasn't going to do another interview about Murdaugh and react to it, but so many of you sent me this interview with Creighton Waters, actually a bunch of different clips from Creighton Waters interviews. I picked the longest one that I thought had the most information that we could talk about together. So we are going to do that. And we're going to watch this together. And also one more video next week that I think many people are going to be interested in as the leading vote getter for our video next week was to get my dad's take on the Murdaugh trial. And we are going to do that next week. Big George coming on to talk about this. We had an Elizabeth Holmes video planned this week from Pete, and it got deleted because things like that happen sometimes when you're dealing with technology. So hopefully he will either redo part of that or give us some other kind of content next week. Hopefully we can get one of those in. We also have some fun stuff that me and Pete are planning for the podcast, some different stuff that maybe we'll play on YouTube as well. So thank you for everybody who's joining us. Thank you for everybody who's here. Thank you for everybody who comes to hang out with us every time we do one of these videos. And the reason I was late today is I am finalizing a deal to bring on a new lawyer that I'm really excited about. Awesome dude. You guys will get to see him and know him here on this channel in the not so distant future. And we're really excited about him. So we'll talk more about that. You guys get to kind of just like do this life with me and see how this stuff rolls and see what it's like to be a lawyer, the things that happen in a law firm, the new people that come in, the different perspectives they bring, different experience they bring. And you've met a lot of the lawyers in the firm already. So we're going to continue to give you that behind the scenes look and keep you guys involved because you're a big part of it now, whether you like it or not. You are a big part of what we do. The time, the energy, the resources we put into this, the interaction that we get, the people that we meet, the clients that we've met, the clients that we're in the process of helping is awesome and something totally unexpected. And I love YouTube for that. I do. So let's get to this Creighton Waters interview. If you guys have questions here, it's Friday, right? It's Friday. So we'll do a little AMA as well. So after we watch this video together, I will do Murdaugh questions. We'll talk through all of that. We'll get all that done first at the beginning of the video for everybody that's just here for Murdaugh. Then at the end, we'll open it up. We'll do a little Q&A. We'll have some fun before the weekend. And I am going out of town for part of next week. So I am also recording today. Actually, I have recorded already two videos that are probably going to post Sunday, Monday, or Monday, Tuesday of next week. And those are on some topics that we did before. One is the Gabby Petito situation. Gabby Petito, her lawyers have asked for that burn after reading letter written by Roberta Landry to Brian Landry. And we break down that motion for a protective order and the affidavit of Roberta Landry, some really shocking details that she admits to and ratifies, even with the Fifth Amendment privilege going on in there. So really, really interesting video there. And then secondly, we did an update on the TikToker who got sued for defamation from the Idaho professor around the Idaho 4 case. And what's going on with that and all the wild stuff and procedurally what it actually means to get a default and how you actually get the damages from a default and if somebody can get around a default, which happened to her. So those are the two videos that are coming early next week or this weekend. So just want to give you guys a little heads up of that. And then the video with my dad will be Wednesday night. So stay tuned for all of that. All right, let's get to Creighton Waters, everybody's favorite prosecutor right now, the man of the hour. Let's hear what he has to say about this Alec Murdaugh case. He speaks pretty quickly, so we'll just go 1.25 with him. All right, let's do it.
Introduction. Creighton Waters has become a household name, of course, the lead prosecutor in the Alec Murdaugh double murder trial. Creighton, thank you so much for spending the time to come and talk with us today. I know our viewers have been glued to every second of this case.
I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to talk to you.
All right. So the first question is, how has life been for you the last couple of days?
It's really
been- So it's interesting because this reminds me a lot of the Johnny Depp stuff. They rose to stardom. Everybody wanted to know what's next. What's it been like celebrating this big win? It's just a little different to me in a criminal case when people died and now somebody's going to prison for the rest of their life, but justice nonetheless. And for people that believe it went the right way and wanted to get justice for Maggie and Paul. So it is still a win. It's still justice. And he is doing his kind of celebration tour. And I didn't mean any negative connotation with that, if anybody took it negatively, because everybody loved the Johnny Depp lawyers. And they kind of did the same thing. So it is kind of, it reminds me of that, a little feeling of that, which is different than the lawyers that lose, right? Always a different vibe.
Been a crazy experience. There's been so much outpouring from the community and actually across the nation and across the world. I think the weirdest thing for those of us who've been doing this after having done it for 6 weeks and then all the prep going up to that, when you're living under that kind of stress for so long, it's difficult to unplug. And I think we've all kind of experienced that none of us can really relax. It's just maybe finally now that we're a week later that some of us are really able to relax because your body's just telling you got to be doing something. It's not used to having nothing to do. Yeah, so that's probably the weirdest thing there.
I have been tweeting out Creighton and hashtagging your name for 6 weeks, all of the major points you were making in court with a hashtag, and now all of a sudden you joined Twitter.
Yeah,
and it exploded.
Yeah, I sent my first tweet out on Saturday, and it's been pretty crazy the amount of response. I actually created that account back in 2012, and I think I logged in once or twice, and it's just been sitting there dormant. And I decided to tweet as I was packing up my hotel room, which was kind of nostalgic. You know, we had really lived there for a long time.
It's funny, too, how we have seen like, hey, I've been starting to tweet Jim Griffin tweeting and everybody off of this, like, we're getting back on Twitter. I sent out my first tweet. I'm rock and rolling with my guitar. It's just the world is different. I will just tell you, I just had this week, I've had multiple conversations with big shot lawyers talking about growing their social media presence or their YouTube presence. It's a different world. This stuff matters. You guys matter. These communities matter. The people that watch and listen to this stuff matter. And while there are always going to be people that throw shade for whatever reason, and listen, there are people being gross on YouTube and doing stuff that's like cringy and whatever. I mean, that happens. That's going to be with any kind of medium that you deal with, but there's also real lawyers, real legal analysts, even if they don't practice law, on here, providing a service, answering questions, making it interactive, doing the same things that, you know, media and news that we've had for as long as radio and television has been available. And it's necessary, and especially to understand these processes. So real lawyers are doing this stuff. Big shot lawyers are doing this stuff. It matters. It's important. And I just wanted to point that out as, again, Attorney General, legitimate, handling big cases, and he's getting on Twitter now. Harpooly and Jim Griffin, whatever you want to say about them, real lawyers, former prosecutors, defense lawyers, they're on Twitter doing their social media thing as well. So it's real. It's not just a grift or whatever or something that, you know, some wannabes do. Now, I couldn't care less what anybody says about me, but I've been hearing it with some other people and seen some other people getting arguments on Twitter, which that's what it's for. I couldn't care less what they say about me, because I know what I do, so whatever. But can't argue with this. And talking about tweeting and YouTube and all that stuff, it's just really interesting for somebody that does some YouTube stuff to see them talking about that and that being part of the conversation.
I made a lot of friends there, and so I sent out a tweet, and it really took off.
And you're a
way.
Guitar player.
Yeah, and then I sent out a guitar video, and so that was kind of fun as well. That's always a good thing, and I've been doing that ever since I was 15, and have some good friends that I play with and other bands I've been in. And we have a good time doing that.
So, one of the many things you gave up for the last
year. Yeah. I mean, that was probably the least that I have played guitar since I was 15. I got my first guitar in May of 2015. That was probably the longest period of time. In fact, for the first 4 weeks, I didn't even have one down there. And then I finally brought one down, but I hardly touched it while I was down there. It's a 12 to 20 hour a day job when you're doing something like that. It's just not much time for that.
And I have to ask now, since you said that before we dive.
I'm glad that he said that, because We sit here, we talk about trial lawyers. Some people are kind of nasty on social media about trial lawyers. It's all hard. It takes a lot of work, 12 to 20 hour days. That's not an exaggeration when you're in trial. You're literally recapping, debriefing, coming down from the day you just had. Then you start prepping for the next day. Then you do it. Legal arguments pop up. New evidence pops up. You got to deal with it. You got to do research. You got to write memos. You got to prep witnesses. You got to prep cross-examination. It is wild. And I'm glad that he said that. And it is really, really hard work. And he did a really good job with all of the facts, dealing with everything, making arguments. He won a ton of arguments in front of this judge. A lot of that was because of his very good arguments that he would make and sticking to it and knowing kind of the vibe of where it was going and continuing to build on that.
Case, I got to speak to you this weekend. You said you lost 10 pounds. You lived in a hotel. You just told me you skipped most meals and ate canned soup. Not the glamorous life some people know now for somebody that's a household name.
Well, yeah, I mean, my typical routine, and this the breakfast that they had there at the hotel, we made friends with the ladies that worked down there in the kitchen. And so I would eat a big breakfast. They really took care of us. I was sad. That was part of the reason why I was sad to see them go. They were just a bright spot every morning, always so cheerful. Eat a big breakfast. I tend not to eat lunch during trial. I'll eat, a couple of energy bars or something like that. And then, dinner, some of the other team, they might get to go out and go out to eat. I think I maybe went out to eat, not during the weekends, maybe four times in its entirety. And generally, somebody would bring me back some takeout or it might be some canned soup or peanut butter and jelly. Every minute seemed like it had to matter. And it was difficult to go to a restaurant and sit there and order and wait for the food. The normal things that you're used to doing. But, when you're in the middle of that thing, you're watching those minutes tick by and there's just so much work to be done that, typically I would stay in the room and continue to work. But we still had a lot of fun. We had a great time, particularly on the weekends. The whole team just working so hard. And it was really, it reminded us all of dorm life, cramming late for tests and that sort of thing. And then, staying up late. And
that builds a lot of camaraderie. And again, we've heard that in other cases and other lawyers talking about it. So it is interesting to me when they have that kind of vibe. And it is fun. It's so stressful, though. It's more stress than fun, I think.
Getting up early and, occasionally a little fun. So it was a great experience.
Well, let's dive back into the case now. You got to see the evidence before any of us did. We saw it for the first time when it was put on trial and you had a witness come up and testify. But when you were going through all the mountains of evidence, what is the first point that you saw that you thought, we got him? The jury's going to understand this.
Well, I think, so the way this case developed, initially, it was with the 14th Circuit Solicitor's Office, the local solicitor, and it was not until August 11th that he conflicted the case to the Attorney General's office, and it was not until a couple weeks later after the side of the road that I was brought in. And of course, what I normally do is state grand jury. We do complex white-collar public corruption, gangs, narcotics cartel stuff.
That is a lot more of what he does, and I think that's interesting that he mentions those are the kind of cases he handles more, not a murder case like this. And you can kind of tell the way people try cases a little bit different. And I think that some of the other lawyers there had more experience at the solicitor's office handling cases like this, but he was really good on the white collar stuff and the financial stuff.
The side of the road, it just happened. And something struck me that this is extremely unusual. These things may relate to one another. So the first thing that we did was start to look at that. Of course, I was aware even prior to that, that the blackout that was used to kill Maggie was a family weapon. The cases that were found around her body matched weathered cases found at other places of the property. So obviously that's a very, very significant fact as you look at this. And then there's just an exhaustive investigation going on. But I think, as I've said, all those roads continue to lead back to Alec. But probably the first thing that stuck out to us was the fact that, okay, we've got a family weapon that's committing these crimes. And, obviously that's concerning. And then all of a sudden we're discovering that this man, Alec Murdoch, was not who anyone thought he was. And that's certainly concerning. So we started to explore those factors.
In so many cases, especially a murder case that you've tried before, it is very rare for a defendant to take the stand in his own defense. Were you excited, nervous? What were your emotions knowing that you were going to get to speak to Alec Murdoch and ask him what you wanted to ask him?
I always was confident. I felt confident that he was going to take the stand. And
you see the little smirk, and we all kind of felt that way. He was baiting him. He wanted him to take the stand. I heard a couple different iterations of this in different interviews. He kind of brought, like all of them do when we watch these interviews, a lot of the same beats were hit. He absolutely wanted Alec Murdoch to take the stand, and he was ready for it, and he had a plan for it.
It's certainly nervous. Everything about this is nervous. But when you do something like this, if you're not a little nervous, no matter how long you've been doing it, you're probably not paying attention.
100% agree. So many unknowns. We have no clue if the jury hates us or loves us or is with us or against us. There's always going to be nerves. There's always going to be adrenaline, some anxiety. You're ready to go. That's why you get these huge highs while you're there. And then you come down at the end of the day or at the end of the trial. It's literally like a, like the adrenaline just leaves your body. I love the way he's explaining this from a trial lawyer's perspective. He is absolutely explaining it like a trial lawyer. You get into routines, you get camaraderie from the group working together. You do some baiting, you get ready for stuff, you make some expectations, you're a little bit nervous, you make plans, sometimes they break, you're always ready to adapt. I love this explanation by him.
And not as focused as you need to be. That was obviously very exciting. I was looking forward to that. I thought that he would not be able to help himself and that he would take the stand, and he did. And then I thought that, you know, it was going to take a while, but I eventually could get the jury, see him lie in real time, mm-hmm. see him make those mental processes to do that. And I thought that that was, you know, that was gonna be pretty devastating. You know, that cross, I thought I ended up being fairly pivotal. You know, and of course I started the cross on one day and I knew that I would be cut off by the end of the day after a couple hours. So to some extent I had.
And these are things we talked about, right? How you plan out, when is the day going to end? When is the weekend coming? We have to make sure that, you know, the jury's going to need a reset. So we don't want to get to our most important point and then have to take a break in the middle of us making it. We want to be able to make that point. You probably don't want to make the most important point at 5:30 when they're all tired and ready to go home. So they absolutely thought about this stuff, which is what we discussed as it was happening.
To kind of slow walk it, because I know in many respects I'd be starting over the next morning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you really have to do it for a while and do it for a long time to sort of get that the defendant kind of where you want them. So that was a moment I'd been expecting the entire trial and one that we were prepared for.
All right. Speaking of the cross, for those of us that were following the case closely, you asked the same question again and again, trying to get Alec to answer about looking his clients in the eye and being able to lie. I understood the point you were trying to make is that this is somebody who can lie to anybody about anything.
Right.
You brought up Hakeem Pinckney, you brought up the Plyer sisters, you brought up, of course, Tony Satterfield and what his family had been through, but you couldn't get him to say definitively. I mean, he skirted around every time you asked the question if he could look them in the eye. Why was that so important for you to get the jury to hear?
Well, just because he had just done that to them. He had, you know, he's a very skilled trial lawyer, and he had just during his direct testimony, you know, leaned forward and made eye contact with those jurors, much as you do, and just had tried to convince them, much as I knew that he would because he was so confident in his ability to do so. But he had made eye contact with those jurors, and I just wanted them to understand this is the kind of man that can do that, can be very convincing and seem very sincere and genuine, but it's not. It's absolutely not. You know, he had that one rote answer he clearly had practiced. And I think at one point I said, well, why don't I just write that down on a piece of paper and you can just hold it up every time you want to get that answer. But obviously, in cross, you can't let him off the hook in that way. And so it was important.
Different things going through his mind, right? So listen closely. We all watch this together. So we see, yeah, he could have done this or could have done that when he kept repeating the same line over and over again. He knew he was going to try to argue with them. He knew he was going to try to set up that he had looked people in the eye and lied to him in the past. So this is all part of the plan with the trial, how it kind of comes together. It's interesting to hear it from the horse's mouth, as I say.
Important to do that. It was also a lot of that was that first day. And again, I needed to not cross over until where I wanted to go too early, because if I did that at the end of the day, you know, you kind of lose your momentum overnight and you have to kind of start over. So and then I did the next day and start over. So also a different cross in that a traditional cross, you know, you try to really control the conversation, but that's not what I wanted to do with this guy. This guy's very, very confident in his ability to be convincing and to talk to people and to talk his way and to be the biggest person in the room. And so I wanted to get him talking. And so I had intentional pauses because he couldn't stand that. He would come up with something new and I'd be like, great, let's talk about that. And
some of this, you know, to me is easy to say in hindsight. Like I just took these pauses and he couldn't stand that. It's like, I don't know about that. And I think most of what Alec Murdoch said was very planned, regardless of, you know, if it was a lie or he could prove it was a lie afterwards. But there's two sides to every one of these stories, you know?
And I think the net result of that was that the jury got to see him continue to add to and perfect and construct his lie as the time went on. And obviously, you know, they can speak for themselves, but I think that was pretty devastating.
Something else that really struck me in.
So I think I did forget in the beginning to say, like the video. Thank you, Sheila. Like the video, subscribe to our page, do all the YouTube-y things here, and we'll keep riding.
your cross of Alec Murdoch was hitting home the point that while he remembered some very specific, minute details of this June 7th, he could not remember the last thing he said to Maggie and Paul.
Correct. Yeah. He had one that struck me was he had this very specific memory of the phone falling down in the console to explain why he was pausing at Alameda in the car for a while because the GPS data showed that. And that one just kind of stuck out to me that he could remember that very specific thing from that night, but couldn't remember his last conversation with his wife and son.
And that was something the jury picked up, that he couldn't remember his last conversation with his wife and son. You guys picked all that up. And I did think it was interesting how Murdoch had almost too good of an explanation for certain things that would probably not have been memorable, like what'd you do in the parking lot at your parents' house. And I did agree that that one little slip up of having a specific example, he should have just been like, I have no idea. I could have just been adjusting my seatbelt, adjusting my shirt. I could have dropped my phone. I could have done a million things, just sit there for a second. I clearly was not hiding guns and clothes. That's what his answer, I think, should have been. But again, maybe, you know, as crazy as it sounds, maybe he was just telling the truth and he did remember that 1 minute. From my perspective and Creighton Waters at this point, it seemed a little fishy that he did remember that one specific instance, but didn't remember a lot of other things that seem to be more important.
He couldn't remember what he was doing during 902 to 906 when he's not only making multiple phone calls, but his phone shows more steps than it had shown all day.
Yeah, the step data to me, they relied on so much. I do not think that those steps actually prove that he was doing anything. But the jury believed he was hiding something. I mean, from their interviews, they said, oh yeah, he definitely had time to just enough time to hide the gun and hide the clothes. It's like, okay.
When I asked him, were you on a treadmill? Were you doing jumping jacks and that sort of thing? Which was a kind of a light moment, but the point was valid. I mean, his phone just fired up and became active. I think that was very telling to the jury and clearly showed what we argued to the jury, that he left his phone at the house intentionally. And was doing so to manufacture an alibi. But when he picked it up, he was a busy, busy guy.
283 steps. I remember
that's
that too.
283 steps in 4 minutes.
And talking about him getting on the stand, what was your reaction the first time? The prosecution had already put several witnesses on the stand that said that's him at the kennel video. That's him. He was with his family at 8:44 to 8:45.
Right.
According to other testimony, their time of death was around 8:49. That's when both Maggie and Paul stopped using their phone. The first time you heard Alec say, that's me. Mm-hmm. What was your reaction?
Well, I didn't know what he was going to do until he got on the stand. I mean, if people, I think, were starting to wonder, why do y'all keep doing that? Why are y'all putting up one witness after another to say, that's him on the kennel video? That's him on the kennel video. Well, that was because he had always denied he was there. There was a young man before the kennel video came out who had told police that he was on the phone with Paul and thought he heard Alec's voice. But, you know, while I don't think Alec liked that, that's, you know, explainable. Oh, he was mistaken. And that's what you heard from the interview. That's what he told police. Oh, he must have been mistaken. It wasn't me. You know, I'd be surprised if he thought that. But when the kennel video came out, you know, that was obviously a little bit different. But the first time that I ever heard him say that, the first time his own brothers ever heard him say that, oh, okay, wait a minute, I was at the kennels just a moment before they died, was when he got on the stand. And, you know, I think the jury saw through that. And I think that was pretty, pretty devastating. You know, when I started this case, and you look at how I was going to put the evidence up, this case is different because normally if Alec wasn't the person who did it, he would be our first witness. He would be the grieving father, you know, with very emotional testimony who came upon this terrible scene.
I thought that was a really good point. If he didn't do it, he would have been witness number one, and they would have loved the fact that he was a good witness and a trial lawyer and knew how to connect with juries. So that's a good point on their part, is if he really didn't do it and we thought it was someone else, we would have wanted to get justice for them, and he would have been a witness for us. Now, I think all the other stuff creates a little reason that they had to probably dislike him, but it's a good point he makes here.
But we couldn't do that. But I also needed to get the jury very familiar with his voice, which is a very distinctive voice. So I'm going to have to play the 911 tape. I'm going to have to play the body cam with Daniel Green. I'm going to have to play those statements. Well, the risk there is that you're also sort of playing his exculpatory version of events for the jury. So I have to do that in a manner that has them thinking critically about what he's saying, but also getting very familiar with his voice, so that by the time I first played the kennel video, while it was important to have that witness there and say, yes, that's Alec, I know him, the jury's hearing it themselves. And by that point, they're familiar enough with his voice that they can make that same conclusion.
I want to bring up something you said in your closing argument, and this is something that I think a lot of our viewers might have seen perhaps a glare during some of your cross of Alec Murdoch. You brought up him glaring at you when he came in and out of the courtroom every day. What did it and people have testified too, and you know, that this was a dynasty, this was generations. They even Judge Newman said his family had been prosecuting people for a century.
Correct.
Did any of that ever intimidate you?
No, it really didn't. It's the kind of thing that enthuses me, and I
And this is always interesting how to answer these questions as a trial lawyer. We are usually the types of people that have kind of type A personalities. You're not going to bully me. Listen here, Bo, why are you doing this to me? Bo, he loved doing stuff like that. And so how you answer questions like this, I always think is interesting. Are you intimidated by this, by the family, by the power, by the money? And he says, I was enthused by it. Which I think is a pretty good answer. I always wonder what the perfect answer would be. I think the perfect answer would be, I know it's there. There's no denying that it's there. I did my best to try to try this case like any other case where I felt like a defendant was guilty. And I feel like I just did my job. You know, that's the kind of thing. But it's so hard to not be like, oh yeah, yeah, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. David versus Goliath, bring it on. This is my kind of show. You know, that kind of stuff is always kind of the go-to. Can't blame them for it. It is probably true as well. So I don't have any hate for it. It's always interesting when stuff like that happens and questions like that come down in cases like this.
Worked with Mr. Randolph and had nothing but the highest respect. Buster's time was before mine.
So he has nothing but the highest respect for Randolph. And if you watch the documentaries and you hear about all this other stuff, Randolph was just as much into covering up stuff, allegedly, for family members, including Paul and maybe even including Alec. So he hates Alec and everything that he did, but he has a lot of respect for Mr. Randolph. I just think it's interesting. It's the same way you look at some of those old documentaries that were done before Paul's death, and they spoke a certain way about Paul and Maggie. Very different to how everybody's talking about Paul and Maggie now. And you're just kind of seeing the weight in the water and how reputations and things can shift. We see it in Hollywood all the time. And now we're kind of seeing it in the legal world. So I do think that's interesting how glowingly they spoke about earlier generations of Murdochs. Yet, if you listen to a lot of this stuff that was kind of happening in the background and the groundswell of Let's Get Alec Murdoch, a lot of it was not so friendly about the Murdoch dynasty. Not just Alec Murdoch, according to most people who are invested in this, is not the first bad apple here that was taking advantage of their power and influence. Thank you so much, Heather.
So it wasn't that, but you know what we do in state grand juries, we do a lot of public corruption. We do a lot of narcotics cartels. So those sorts of things, the influence doesn't intimidate us or concern us. It doesn't make us any more anxious to go after someone, but if the evidence is there, the influence factor is something we're used to. And I think that when we look at this case, as we look at other cases the state grand jury has done, we're looking for cases or like to be involved in cases that have an effect beyond just that particular case, that have a larger effect on the community, that have a larger effect on systems and that sort of thing. Alec is presumed innocent of those white collar offenses, and he will get a fair trial on those. And I want to be clear about that.
Like, even I am kind of like, under oath, he admitted doing it. So still presumed innocent that's really sticking to our judicial system, right? That's a great understanding. If anybody doesn't understand the presumption of innocence, as we sit here right now today, Alec Murdoch is innocent and presumed innocent of those crimes. That's wild, right? But that's why we have our system. He is going to go and be convicted. They have evidence beyond a reasonable doubt coming out of his own mouth. But as we sit here now, he is presumed innocent. Interesting, right?
But that's an important part of this particular case, because this is the kind of thing that I think can expose undue influence in a system and how it can be abused by those in power. And if you can put a stop to that, or if you can expose that sort of thing and make the systems better, then, you know, that's the kind of thing that we really like to do in state grand jury. Fundamentally, this case was about Maggie and Paul. That's the most important thing about it. And I don't mean to minimize that, because that was our fundamental goal, was to make sure that justice was done for them. But there are other aspects of this case and other aspects of what Alec was doing that if we can shine a light on that and put a stop to that and make sure the system is fairer for everyone, then that's an extremely important goal too.
You've led me into my next question. Being in charge of the state grand jury, working so closely with them, what is next? I know a lot of people would love to see Gloria Satterfield, their former housekeeper's case, reopen.
And then the question they all get after the big win, what is next? So what's next for an attorney general? You know, not a civil lawyer. He's not going to go make partner at some law firm. He's not going to start his own law firm. Well, I guess he could start his own law firm, but then he'd be doing the other side. So it's interesting to ask an attorney general, what's next? What justice are you looking for next?
And of course, Tony Satterfield, who took the stand, and his testimony to me was some of the most heartbreaking. What case will be next?
Well, that remains to be seen. I mean, first of all, anything that's not indicted, you know, I can't comment on any pending investigations other than to say that we're taking a very broad look at all aspects of this case sort of writ large. You know, we have indicted 99 white collar offenses to date. You know, I can't comment specifically.
To date, which means there could be more.
On those. And I do also have to point out that he's presumed innocent until, you know, he's had a fair trial on those. But we have also planned to aggressively pursue those for the reasons I just talked about. Eventually, we will have a status conference with the judge and we will get those scheduled. There's a lot of white collar alleged victims out there, including the Satterfield boys, including some of the other names that you mentioned. And it's important that there be a voice for their situations as well. And we plan to pursue those. There are other defendants out there who also presumed innocent, but we've indicted the banker from Palmetto State, who's Russell Lafitte. And we've indicted Corey Fleming, who's another lawyer down that way. And so those defendants will need to be addressed as well. So
Corey Fleming is the lawyer that got involved in the Satterfield situation as well.
Our work is still cut out for us in this matter. And we're not done yet. And we're not certainly not going to sit back after this verdict too long. We'll be getting back to work and digging on these matters. And on top of that, we still have drug cartel cases and other corruption cases and other bad guys out there. Fentanyl, as you know, is a huge problem that we're trying to fight. The state grand jury, we're the only state entity that can do state wiretaps, which, you know, go under very close judicial supervision. It's not a usual and common thing to do, but it is a powerful tool that we can go to a judge.
More bad guys to get.
Where appropriate. You know.
That's what's in his future. He's going after more bad guys.
I have that. So there's a lot that the state grand jury is doing on top of just this case. And we've still got a lot to do in this case as well.
All right. Attorney Creighton Waters, congratulations on your victory in this case. And thank you so much for your time today.
I enjoyed it.
All right. So yeah, he's got more bad guys to get and more to do in this case as well. So I think we've hit interviews with just about everybody involved in this case. So hopefully everybody got their fill of each side. I know there were other interviews as well. I'm going to hit a few Murdoch questions and then we will get to maybe 15 minutes of just a Q&A if you guys want to do that. Paula Graham, I wish it was the jury, you know, or the jury pool. Since you always refer to us as potential jurors, we are more than just a chat. What do you think, Paula? Honestly, I like a lot of the names. I think the only way to do this appropriately is let everybody vote on it and then go with whatever gets the most votes. I hope people aren't offended by whatever the name is. If you don't think it's enough or if you think it's too much or whatever, I'm really just going to let you guys pick whatever it is based on the vote. So if you want to vote, go to the community page. We may narrow it down one more time for one more vote. But as it sits right now, whatever gets the most votes is what's going to end up being called the chat. I don't really like call you guys stuff that often, which is why I think it's never really come up. People say it's good for YouTubers to have a name for it. I don't know how much I'm going to use it or whatever, but I don't know. Something that came up that a lot of people seem interested in when it came up and we were talking about it. Greary Gaber. So if he's guilty, did his lawyers know that? Not necessarily. Every case and every lawyer is different. Not every lawyer knows whether or not their client did it. And if you listen back to Harpootlian's, I think it was on the Senate floor when he was speaking, he said they weren't concerned with whether or not he did it. So maybe they didn't ask. They were concerned with whether or not the investigation was appropriate and they could prove who did this beyond a reasonable doubt. Candy, Peter, when would you consider the number of post-verdict interviews too many? If like 3 months from now, they're still doing it and still talking about this specific case and no future case, then potentially I would say that's too much. But right now in the wake of it, a week in, I mean, here's the real point. You guys are still interested in it. You're still asking me to talk about it. You're still sending me these interviews, sending me things to talk about. So while the public is still interested in it, I think that it's fair game for them to answer questions for the public and shed some light on the process and what it was like to be involved. As long as I think the public interest is important. And if it's a public trial and there's public interest and public question and you can come answer some of that, then I think it's okay. But I mean, months down the road, if it's still going on, then maybe that would be problematic. Some of us don't believe he's guilty of murder. Well, he is guilty of murder. Some of you think the jury came to the wrong decision, or some of you for your vote don't think that the evidence was enough. And I would agree with that. They would not have gotten my guilty vote. But as we sit here today, he is guilty of murder. But I get what you're saying, Pokey. And I the whole time I said I would have voted not guilty for lots of reasons. We've been over that one a couple times. Yeah, I'm ready for the next case too. Share rule. And, you know, even another thing we could do right now, which I think would be interesting. So I think, Yeah, it's pronounced, it actually sounds like it's pronounced Elick, E-L-I-C, like Elick is almost what it sounds like it's pronounced by the people that are really in it, you know? But luckily we're kind of done with these pronunciations for a while. And then we got to get to the Idaho, the Moscow and the Kootenai and all those kind of, pronunciations, Latah County. Jesse Sue, Peter, what are your thoughts of him using his lawyer knowledge as protection in jail? Not just lawyers, but I had a guy that we had a client one time that had some, he wasn't a psychiatrist, but he had some training in psychology and things like that and psychiatry. And he was like a king. He was like people's therapists in jail. They would come to him. They would give him, you know, gum and candy and whatever it may be. And it was like real cush for him. And he actually enjoyed being in there and he didn't care. He ended up pleading to a lot of years because he was just like, yeah, okay, I did it. And you know, it ain't that bad in here. I'll stay in here. So a lot of people with a lot of different background can also provide a service for inmates that either don't feel like their lawyer's working for them. They have, you know, their own issues. They want somebody to help look at the case so they can provide a service for them. Maybe he, listen, I am a firm believer and we've been over this before and some people disagree. I am a firm believer and people are never too far gone. And while Alick Murdoch has done a lot of bad in his life, and maybe even if some of you feel like this was an inappropriate verdict, maybe it's a little karma for, you know, the inappropriate things that he did. Well, I don't think that's what the law is for. Life sometimes turns out that way, but maybe he will be able to now make a change and help people. Money is not involved, right? Or I guess it could be, or it could be in the form of, you know, bubble gum or whatever, but maybe he'll be able to do some good in prison. Maybe he'll be able to help some people, that could never have afforded an attorney of his caliber before. So I hope that maybe he will be able to turn it around, do some good. He's probably got a lot of time left on the planet. And hopefully he will be able, to do some good. I would love to hear that. If I heard that that was happening in prison, I think that'd be a good thing. I mean, I hear some people said like the connotation of him getting favors for it. I don't know if that had a negative connotation, but you can only get so many favors in prison. Head in the clouds. When does the OnlyFans model murder trial start? Will you cover that? Absolutely. I've been covering it. If you guys want to check out the playlist on what's going on in that case, the Courtney Clenny case, that's absolutely one in our docket. I don't think it's going to go to trial anytime soon. Southwest Florida mom. Welcome. Welcome to you and all the new members. Stephanie. Michael Irvin is suing Marriott for $100 million for defamation. It's interesting. Hotel won't let him see the video they have. So a lot of times pre-suit, I will just tell you, defendants, hotels, companies will not show you the video. But once you file a lawsuit, you have subpoena power. They have to show you the video if they plan on using it or if it can be something that you could use as evidence. Or as I talked about a lot in the video that you guys haven't seen yet, is discovery or something that could be reasonably lead to discoverable material. So that's interesting. Another question I had. Thank you, Azam. I almost said Murdoch. Thank you, Azam, for the super sticker here. What other trials or cases, I should say, I'm not going to jump into a trial next week for sure while I'm on vacation for half the week. But if you guys have cases that you're interested in, send them to me. Send them to me in this chat. Post them in the comments. Send them to me on Instagram and Twitter at Tragos Law. And if a lot of you, now listen, if one person asks for a case or one offs or whatever, I can't do everything, obviously. But I am interested in what you all are following and what you all are interested in. Is it the Brett Favre defamation case? Is it this new Tiger Woods thing, which I think is kind of a nothing burger? I don't want to say she's trying to extort him, but I think that she is potentially using everything she can to try to get some money from him, regardless of the merits to that. I love Tiger. He's done some bad things in his life and made some mistakes as well. But I mean, this guy has literally, since his dad, been basically taken advantage of from everybody in his life, mooching off of him, expecting him to do things. He's been so famous his entire life that it's just so hard for him to live a normal life. And then he gets a girlfriend for multiple years. Seems like they had a good relationship for a while. And guess what? Exactly what he's afraid of. Like, people would think, why would you have to have an NDA with your girlfriend? You guys love each other. You trust each other. It's like, because everybody tries to take advantage of Tiger Woods. And guess what? Call him a jerk for doing an NDA or not trusting his girlfriend or whatever. Guess what? He was right. and look exactly what she's trying to do. I feel bad for him, man. I do. I feel really bad for him. But anyways, yes, Vallo, Daybell, Koberger, Sarah Boone, Clenny, those are all on the list. Alec Baldwin, those are all absolutely on the list. So you don't have to worry about that. Tiger is a piece of garbage, somebody said. I understand why people don't like it. He has done some really bad things that I would never do. And I understand. I love watching him and I do feel for him. I think he's got a lot of mental strain on him and I feel bad for him. I do. I really feel bad for him. That's my number one thought with him. But yeah, I don't really think that's a big legal case that I can add a lot of value to myself. Maybe some Rob, I know, is talking about it and he can probably add a lot more to it than I feel like I can. I gotta be in the situation where I feel like there's some educational value. There's some good discussion back and forth, things like that. But yeah, I really would like to see if there was some consensus. Thank you, Chrissy. If there's some consensus with everybody here in the chat or on Instagram and Twitter, I think that'll be really helpful in picking what our next case will be. Lita, Peter, seriously, why aren't lawyers picked as jurors since they know the law so well? Many times, some lawyers feel lawyers are biased based on whatever area of practice they are in. We have actually picked lawyers on jurors before. One of my first big federal cases I tried with my dad, it was a 4-week trial in federal court. It was a criminal case. We had a civil trial lawyer. Actually, I think he only did pre-suit personal injury. So he was a pre-suit civil lawyer type of guy who did demands and had clients that were injured victims. And he ended up on our jury and we had no problem with him. So it does happen, but if you've ever been on one side or the other of what that case is actually about, they're going to think you're biased toward whatever side you work or are worked on in the past or are currently working on. Heather, I'm not buying it. Clayton was absolutely intimidated. I don't know. I don't know if I can prove or disprove that. Anne Marie Hollihan, welcome. I definitely always say the membership crew. So that's definitely a crew that I always say. I don't know if I always call the chat the same thing. Maui girl. Letitia Stotch trial justice for Gannon. So again, if it's a trial going on right now, it's going to be very unlikely that I'm able to catch up and give you good analysis and breakdowns and discussion off of a trial going on right now, because I have not been following anything this week and I won't be following any trials next week. But cases that are getting ready to go to trial soon, I know Vallo and Sarah Boone are supposed to be going to trial in April. So those are coming up. But we have a couple more weeks here to get started on some new cases, look into some new stuff. Jay Seal, big fan. Thank you. Are you going to cover Heard's trial against her insurance? Trial scheduled for December and the next hearing is on the 13th. So yes, if that goes to trial, you better believe it. Insurance companies getting sued or in lawsuits is one of my favorite things to cover. However, I would be shocked if this went to trial. I would put a big bet on this case settling at some point before a jury brings their verdict. Kim Schonels, Kim S. Thank you for that, Kim. I'll just go with Kim S. Welcome to the membership crew. Let's see what else we got. Members video is going to be next Wednesday. What else? Daybell's like another Murdaugh. Ooh, TG said, I was on a jury once disgusted with fellow jurors. Sounds like there's a story there. In Australia, lawyers can't be jurors. That's interesting. Christine, no Tiger or Baldwin. I am going to do Baldwin because we've been doing it already for a long time. Lots of beef sticks, Gator Girl said. Yeah, hey, that's what he likes. Oh, I guess that could have multiple connotations here. Sherry H., I don't know this case, so if more people are interested in this, let me know. Oh, and also, some people are putting cases in other countries. Because I like to add value to the content we talk about on here, I would prefer it be cases in America, so I actually understand the process. Heard never goes away. That's kind of true. Pooh Bear, I agree with you. If you watched my last video, that was kind of the punchline is I don't think it's actually going in April, but I do think Vallo is going to go in April. Masterson retrial. This is one I've heard a little bit about. Anybody is interested in those, let me know. Okay. So I second Letizia's thoughts. So is it not, so it doesn't sound like it's a trial yet. It sounds like it's coming up this month or next. I sent you the affidavit on IG. Deanna, was that just now? Let me see if I have any messages here. I don't see anything on Letizia yet, but yeah, send me that. Oh, Mama Pink starts March 20th. That sounds like it could be good timing. Maybe we will look into this one. If you guys are interested in it, please let me know. Pepper, I live in Wisconsin, so I'm a huge Packer fan. If I never hear about Brett Favre again, I wouldn't be sad. Yes, dude, those old stories were weird. So Robin Moan, Delphi, I think I've done a video or two on it. It didn't seem like the people in this community were as interested in it. I know it gets, you know, a lot of interest in some other, maybe it was me, maybe it was, you know, stuff that I talked about. If you guys are interested in Delphi, let me know. I kind of already know a lot of the background there. I think we went through the probable cause affidavit together once they made an arrest. Robin, where are you going on spring break? We are actually heading to Chicago for a few days. So we will be there for about 5 days, flying up. My wife and my kids have never been there. So we're going. Hopefully we see a little bit of snow, but hopefully it's not too brutally cold. But it would also be nice to have it be cold since it's 100 degrees here. Let's see what else we got. Jeff Mickle, welcome to the membership crew. Mary Claire, I would love to be on a trial, but never get picked. I've always thought it is that I have attorneys and state police and the family. Very possible, especially because most jury questionnaires ask if you have any law enforcement in your family. I've also worked in every prison in Massachusetts. Yeah. I don't think most of the criminal defense attorneys would probably want somebody that's worked in a lot of the prisons, but I'm sure since you're here and since you're a member, you would be a very fair juror at this point. And you'd be able to put all your kind of experiences to the side and look at the evidence in that case. Anything cult or extremist related? Ooh, interesting. All right, just a day or three ago. Okay. I will look into this Letizia thing a little bit more if more people are interested in it. Maybe we'll do let's do a poll on the community with Letizia and a couple other cases that come in and just see what kind of has the most interest at this point. The justice chat. I like that. Is Masterson going back to trial? I think so, but I have not really looked into it. So put Masterson on the list as well. John, Letizia and Masterson. Masterson is federal, so we're not gonna be able to watch it together. Let's see what else we got. Yes to Delphi. Okay, we can put Delphi on the list as well. Yeah, a lot of Delphis. So Letizia, Masterson, Delphi. That's what we've got so far. Oh, we got some people from Chicago in here. Chicago. I'm in Chicago. Hey, I'm in Chicago. I love Chicago. What else we got? Bring your snow gear. Oh, so it is supposed to snow? Good. That'll be fun. And somebody's like, I'm heading to Florida. Chicago in March, living dangerously. I mean, I feel like I wanted, first off, I was supposed to be in trial starting Monday. So it was the last second trip. And my kids and everybody has never been there. So it'd be fun. Lots of winter here in Minnesota. Yeah. We want it. We want the different season, you know, to travel for it for a few days and then come back where it's nice and hot. Heather, how do I know if I'm a member? I thought I was, not sure, typing on a treadmill, two left feet. You are. Yes, Heather. Cause I can see by the little icon next to your name that you are in fact a member. 911 dispatcher. And they never pick you for the jury. Sometimes they're just, you know, if you'd rather have, I didn't want to call you a devil, but you know, the saying, you'd rather have something that you don't know they have any connection to the world versus somebody who you could even potentially connect to law enforcement. Or if there was a 911 call or a 911 tape or a 911 operator or somebody that responded to a 911 call on trial or taking the witness stand, you might not want that connection based on something that witness is going to say. Yeah. Gabby Petito is on the list as well. Another video coming either Sunday or Monday on that one. That's me, Chicago. Bring the fam to visit me at Lincoln Park Zoo. I don't know if we're going to the zoo. I know we have plans for like some of the other attractions. I don't think zoo was on made the list though. Let's see here. Oh, it snowed last night. Nice. DB Milwaukee Chargers. Okay, yes, that is also on the list. Yeah, if we hear that trial starts, especially if he's representing himself, then yes. Sandy D, Chi-Town. Reminds me of Kanye West a little bit. Chi-Town, right? He's a Chicago guy, I'm pretty sure. Brian Walsh case. So that was the guy that basically like his internet search got him, right? Brian Walsh. That one's probably a ways out, but maybe we can put that on the list too. ER nurse never get picked. There are some cases we would really want nurses on, other cases we would not. Peter's panel. I like that one. Brooke's second round. Yeah. I think that one's already going to be on the list just because we've got history. Once we've got history with somebody, we'll leave them on the list. A lot of people. Okay. Yeah. Add Markell, John, to the list as well. The Dan Markell and, Edelman. Deborah G, welcome. Helen in Texas, welcome. Bunch of new members. That's always fun. Susan Mann, welcome. Yeah, I would like a Bulls game, but there's not going to be a Bulls game when we're there, so we can't hit that. I've talked about doing old cases. Somebody asked about if I ever do old cases, and people mostly like stuff that's going on right now. That's what everybody was talking about. Tori, Peter, did you ever fix being able to see our anniversary chat? So I did talk to YouTube and we did figure this out. They only pop up on YouTube, so people can see them in the YouTube chat, but I'm in StreamYard, which has like YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, everything kind of in one. I'm able to share the videos and share documents and stuff in this and put the comments on the screen live. They don't think there is a fix for me to be able to see them. Azam, Peter, have you watched Supernatural yet? I haven't, but I do have some plane rides coming up. One of the plane rides, do any of you guys watch Luther? Hopefully if you were just here for Murdoch, you left already and you're not bored here by this, but anybody watch Luther? I absolutely loved it. Idris Elba is the main character, and there's a Luther movie coming out on Netflix. I think it came out today maybe, that I'm going to download and watch on the plane, but maybe Supernatural. I don't know. I'd have to have a lot of time for Supernatural. I haven't finished Outer Banks. Anybody watch Outer Banks? I was in early. This season is so, so boring to me, but big John B fan, you know, yeah, Luther, a lot of people liking Luther. Yes. 36 is freezing. Don't bother with the bean. I got to show my kids the bean. Yes, I saw Creighton Waters jamming on the guitar. Very cool. Huh. Chrissy, this is really funny. So we're looking at Netflix, you know, whenever this started to come out and it's on the list, you know, top 10, they're advertising it, whatever. And every time the icon would even get on it, my wife was like, oh, that seems really interesting. Ooh, I'm so interested in that. I'm fascinated by that. I'm like, I don't think I can watch a documentary about a plane disappearing, but that's definitely going to be on my wife's list. Hopefully she watched that on the plane ride with her own, you know, headphones in. So I don't have to watch it. Deborah B, do you, your father and staff pray for America? So I can't speak for the whole staff, but I know my dad and I do all the time. All the time, regardless of who's in power, regardless of whether it's going well or going poorly by any person's imagination or how they stand, always, always. Paula Graham, I just finished season 3 of Outer Banks. Stick with it for a wow ending. Okay, that was my plan. I was like, listen, I just gotta push through. I just gotta push through. Stacey Walpole, Valo Court will charge money for view with audio? Really? That's the first I'm hearing of that. Trish CDA, welcome to the membership crew. Jackie, Love your take on everything. Ormond Beach was home for almost 14 years. Awesome. Hello to the Supernatural fandom, Azam says. So, Tony, can you just a straw poll? I thought juries weren't supposed to take straw polls and Brooke's trial for sure. So they're not supposed to take straw polls during the trial. But when you first go back there, you're allowed to take that initial straw poll or vote. And that's what they did. And that's what almost every jury does before they start talking. River Paisley, my friend is a stuntman on Luther. That's awesome. That's really cool. Allie. Do you think DB will be able to stay quiet this time now that he's being represented? So I have heard that he is going to represent himself if the case goes to trial. Ellen, not Sarah Lee. Outer Banks is not actual Outer Banks. I heard that. I heard that. Figure eight is not actual figure eight. Kind of disappointing. I live on the North Carolina coast. Yeah, I heard that too. Honestly, that's I'm so used to it. Like, I feel like when I was a kid, never since I found out wrestling was not real, it's like, can't believe anything anymore, you know? But it's just there for entertainment. Supernatural is a must. Last Kingdom, Peaky Blinders. I started Peaky Blinders, really not a fan. I stopped. Last Kingdom, one of my favorite shows of all time. Can't wait for the movie. A lot of people are big fans of Supernatural. Okay. Doesn't seem like it would be up my alley, but maybe it would. What about Blacklist? It's law adjacent. Loved Blacklist, Tori, for a long time. I love James Spader. Is that his name? He was in Boston Legal. Alan, I believe, was his name in Boston Legal. But it just got too much. It was too much of the same thing, so I ended up stop watching it. All right, let's see what else we got. Kendra, my cousin told me to watch Outer Banks. Well, I thought she said Outlander, and then five seasons later, I never saw Outer Banks yet. That's good. That's funny. All right, I'll answer maybe two more questions, and then we will take off so I can finish the rest of my work here this Friday afternoon. Yes, I did love Boston Legal as well. Cobra Kai, I started watching. I think it's okay. How to Get Away with Murder, I really, really did not enjoy, Erica. I thought I would love it. I love Viola Davis, I think is that who's stars in that. I just hated it. It was so fake. And so like, it was like so far out there. I was like, I can't even watch this. Stranger Things fan, Jesse Sue. No, I would not. I'm not like a super fan. I did watch it. And whenever another one comes out, I will watch it. I binged it. I really liked parts of it. I really liked certain things about it. But not like a super fan. I will watch it. The big question for Peter was he WWF or WCW WWF? I want a nothing burger t-shirt. That's not a bad, I don't feel like that's my saying, right? I mean, other people say nothing burger, don't they? I know I say it all the time. But I mean, if we can do a nothing burger t-shirt, that would be pretty funny because I say that literally all the time. And I think it more than I even say it. If you can believe that. So no 4-hour chat today. Yeah, absolutely not. 1 hour. 1 hour is our thing. I loved Suits. I watched Suits and I loved Suits. I did a top 10 legal shows of all time. So you have to see where Suits lands on that list, but check out our YouTube page for that. Top 10 legal shows. I also did top 10 legal movies. Welcome, Haley. All right. Somebody said, I've never heard it anywhere, nothing burger anywhere other than here. Maybe. I don't know. That's funny. I know Nothing Burger from your channel. I don't know. That's funny. Well, good. I'm glad I could introduce you guys to Nothing Burger, because that's always fun to say. And it hits hard in these cases when you're like, yeah, it was a Nothing Burger. All right. This was fun. I'm glad we got to do some extra Q&A. So stay tuned here for, and make sure you subscribe and hit that reminder bell for a Gabby Petito update, a TikToker who sued the professor in the Idaho 4 case update. Maybe either Elizabeth Holmes or something else from Pete next week. And then my dad coming in talking Murdoch next Wednesday. And then by next Wednesday, my goal is to figure out what new case we can look at. Masterson retrial, Letitia, Delphi, Adelson. We're going to put a poll up probably today and just let it run and let the votes come in. And by next week, by mid next week, let's pick a new case to start looking at as we kind of go away from Alec Murdoch into the future. So I appreciate all you guys. See you around. Come join the videos. I'll try to be in the live chat as much as I can. And make sure you hit that subscribe button and like the video on your way out. It helps us out. John O'Rourke, while you are on your flight, review the Doyle v. U.S. Court case. I have read that Doyle case, and it's interesting. And people see it a lot different ways. Ellen, Devotion, great movie about World War II pilots. Interesting. Okay, put that on the list as well. Definitely soda. Pop is not a real pop. Is what you do to your bubble gum. All right. Take it easy, everybody. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Lawyer You Know podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, which I hope you did, here's what to do next. Give it a share, rate, and review the show on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify, and make sure you subscribe to the show in the listening app of your choice. Follow me on all social media platforms at Tragos Law, and join the Lawyer You Know YouTube channel and community where you can ask me questions live on all of these cases. If you've got an idea for a specific topic, or you have a personal legal question on an injury case, whether it's a car accident, trip and fall, wrongful death, or catastrophic injury case, please email me at lawyeryouknow@gmail.com. All of these links I just mentioned are included in the show notes section of this episode. So until next time, I'm Peter Tragos.